Yeah. It really is. And that's, nobody has a real model of what a space battle's going to look for. So what you really get is what they want to write about, which is pirates and swords. That's what I always want to write about, pirates and swords. Or they, David Weber was writing about the French Revolution. So he wrote the end of the war with England and the French Revolution. He just used space battleships and missiles instead of cannon. And his first book, the first Honor Harrington book, is absolutely the same as what's the name of the book? The Captain, Master and Commander.
Yeah.
You spend freaking 400 pages getting to know her crew, and 30 seconds blowing them away. Oh. Which just, I am very empathetic, so sometimes I tear up a bit. It's nothing. Don't be alarmed. It just happens to me.
That series really should have taken off, the movie series.
It was Master and Commander? Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Well, we kind of jumped straight in the conversation, so without an introduction. So let's pause and introduce who we're talking to today.
Hi.
We're here with Hawkins Austin, author and many other official things.
So, yeah, I'm the average author, historian, scientist, LARPer. I've done a few things. Of course, I'm not a kid anymore. Yesterday was my birthday. I'm 57. I've been doing all of this all the time. And so, yeah, I really am everything. We were going to start with science.
Yeah, let's start with what's your I guess, well, they're both real jobs, but your non-fictional job.
What am I doing today? So I work for a company that builds spaceships. We build satellites. Part of our work was on the Orion. So we literally build spaceships. Mostly I do computers. I test computers. I build boards to test computers for the rigors of space. I am a radiation effects engineer, and I have done survivability, radiation effects, and written a lot of requirements since. I guess I got in the field in 96, got hired by NASA, and I didn't expect to get in that field. I have 4 degrees in fire. I expected to be doing something involving fire. I got a master's in plasma physics. I've got degrees in thermal engineering. Was a fire expert. Now I'm 40 years out of date. That's irrelevant, but, and I got into it, and Jim Howard taught me the ropes, and since then I have been in radiation and survivability, and I'm considered one of the experts. I hate to say that. I'm the kid. So you got to realize that this field was formed back when they started weapons testing back in the 70s. And all those guys are old now. I like to say that the guy who put in my favorite device is an X-ray flash source they have over at in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And I use that all the time. And the guy who taught me how to do that, when he was a lieutenant, he installed that source in 1967.
It's like in the Wild West days where it's like, let's just drop a nuke in the desert. Like,
yeah.
I'm hoping things have gotten safer since then.
They have a table there, and I'm not kidding. They have a table there, which I thought was unusually large, and the guys looked over at me and said, yeah, it can fit a cow. And I went, why would you have a cow? And they looked at me and said, we have had cows on this table. And I'm like, okay, you know what? This is a conversation I clearly do not need to know.
I presume that's a dead cow where they were testing radiation?
No, they were testing radiation effects on living creatures. They're military, and Kirkland has done, human effects of radiation. I don't do human effects anymore. I do electronics. I prefer to not deal with killing people. One of my least favorite jobs was a war gamer. So there's a job we did where we came up with scenarios. And there's a very simple test that they give captains who are going to become admirals. And they give them their log books. So they own a fleet. They're in a conference room. And there's 20 or 30 of the guys in there, depending on the year. And their crew, which is usually about a dozen guys that they've worked with for decades. And they're given a set of missions, which could include war or anything else. And they're trying to do these missions. And literally, they look up, they flip pages in the logbook and go, all right, we're going to launch a strike. So that means I call this guy, I do this, this. And they read through the pages of what they're supposed to do. And at 4:20 p.m., I walk in and say, you have lost connection with Pacific Command. And they're like, oh, that can't happen. And it can't happen unless somebody dropped a nuke on Pacific Command. So I have to work out all the fatalities and the casualty lists, and we try to work through how they're going to, what do they do? And not have a breakdown. I go home and have a shot of scotch because it's a very emotional day to sit in there and try to figure out what kind of decisions people are going to make with literally hundreds of thousands of lives on the line.
Yeah, it's kind of having to think on your feet, but then also if you make the wrong decision, and even if you make the right decision, there's going to be fatalities in those situations.
There's no good answers when there's a nuclear war in sight. And so that I found a little bit, shall we say, overly stressful. And one of the reasons I wrote the requirements for space warfare, literally did. I worked for the guy who's who got to sign it, but I did the and I hired people who did the real work. I don't want to give myself too much credit for typing in numbers that other people give me, but I wrote those requirements, and I was a little uncertain that Haydn and a few others wanted to do some things with commercial cots that I thought was inappropriate. And so I used my secret techniques and found out who was building the boards for Haydn, etc., and applied for work there. Yeah, this is kind of on the edge of not exactly appropriate. But anyway, because I wanted to find out how they were going to do it and what they were doing, and I interviewed their guys because they were interviewing me, and some of them were really good, and some were, I was impressed by Eric. He had actually worked at one of the Promptos facilities I knew, and so I had some idea, and they were really worried about the that bastard in D.C. and what he was doing with requirements, and so they hired that bastard in D.C. So I came to Denver, and I worked in Denver for the last 5 years, making sure that our spacecraft that do military things are not going to die on orbit, no matter who throws a nuke at them. Mind you, now, none of these have people on board. The Orion mission, which I did work on, and that system is just as hard, and it has, there's a cute story there, but jumping back, that one has people involved. Most of my systems for military are the slower, harder systems. What we built for Orion has one of our giant FPGA boards, and you don't need to know what that is, but let's just say it can hold several personalities which are running the software. So you design it around, you know, here's a digital processor, and here's a docking cam, and here's a couple of things, and so you turn the dial, and literally you're loading different software, firmware they call it, and then, okay. Turns out that they're good hard computer that they designed to do all the rest of the mission was so slow and ineffective that they went ahead and put all the software on our computer and let our computer run the whole mission because it ran it much better. And we decided the whole three personalities weren't necessary as big as our FPGA was, so it ran all three personalities at once and in fact ran the entire mission, and now the main flight computer is a backup.
What are building, other than, like I said, desk, what's the kind of difficulties people don't think about when building a computer to operate in space versus something here?
So the first one, and I literally, this is the first lesson I teach when I teach. When they design, you assume it's going to work, and you design something like, you know, a cell phone, and why would it not work? Stop. It's going to stop. It's going to break. You're going to be on orbit, and it's going to fail. Now, what do you do next? Does it have a full reboot system that says, oh, hey, the computer's not working. Let's start it over from beginning. Ah, it's not reaching its first waypoint. Let's reload the waypoints. Let's get it all back in together.
Have you tried unplugging it and plugging it back in?
Right, exactly. And no IT guy is going to go up on orbit and do that. So you have to set that up so that if everything fails, it decides to call home. And it doesn't wait on somebody to come up there and touch it, because no one ever will again. And designing a system that is self-sufficient from the ground up. So if you had, if it was your laptop, it would automatically go, huh, man, this program isn't working well. I'm going to reboot this program for you. Now let me insulate it into a separate area. I've rebooted it. Is it clean? Is it working okay? Does it pass the checks that you wrote up? We wrote a full test series. Okay, it passed those tests. I'm going to allow this software to work, this hardware to go again. Does it work? Okay, it's finished our check sequence. Now we can go back to normal operation. So you have to have an oversight system designed for everything, even the oversight system. And so, yeah, it's a redundancy all the way back to, I mean, at some point you've got an MRAM, which is a giant chunk of crystal, which can't possibly be upset or die. And it's got an ASIC cut that will reload this little FPGA that will restart everything. And that's my third in the sequence. And so I've been doing this work since 96. I'm good at it. Good at the military level or at the human level. It's hard. But honestly, the problem most people have is that they trust a bunch of college students to figure it out, or a really smart guy to figure it out. And honestly, while being smarter than me wouldn't be hard, it doesn't get you to the answer. The answer is, what is the last 50 things that have gone wrong with the system like this? Let's go back and see which of those are going to happen to our system. And we're not going to expect it. So expect everything. Anyway, the more I get involved in the program, the more they end up doing redundancies and they hate me. So they try to keep me out until such point as they realize they need about 6 more redundancies.
Sitting around trying to think of what's all the things that can go wrong. Just pre-planned for all the contingencies having contingencies.
So I have one other advantage that they don't have, is I'll take the system that supposedly works and I'll take it over to a radiation environment like a proton gun, and I will break it. And I will write up all the interesting ways that it dies horribly in orbit. And then send that back to their programmers and their hardware designers, and they're like, but this can't happen. I'm like, yes, clearly it can. Here's the logs. Here's the run logs. I did that. And they're like, oh, well, I guess we should have a meeting on. Yeah, okay, we'll fix this. Anyway.
And then they fix it and shoot it back to you, yeah?
I rarely get them a second time. There's a few military programs where I've spent 5 years with a board, and that one I did. I have 4 years with a board. And in the end, we did the most ridiculous test that has never been done before. I took a functioning satellite system, thump, 250 pounds of what's supposed of a box. It's a big, giant aluminum box, 50 cables coming out of it. Had to shield all those cables, and then I shot that box.
With radiation?
Yes, with a giant, it's called the short pulse gamma. It's a little facility that they have on the West Coast, and they use a 6 MeV gamma rays, and it will, they're technically X-rays, but blew right through the box. Aluminum's essentially transparent to it.
So with all of this talk about space weapons, is the Space Force thing that DC has been talking about, is that a bunch of hooey, or is that something that can really happen and make a difference?
So the most exciting thing there, and I'm sure this is not interesting to anyone else in the universe, they've developed a new funding mechanism for the SDA, Space Defense, and that's part of Space Force. And the funding mechanism allows them to go to small vendors like Seeker and look for and build satellites. Now, Lockheed and Raytheon bought various companies, including my own, to try to get this power inside their own walls. And they have succeeded mostly. But the trick is, we're running out. There'll be 85 satellites in a network. They'll use lasers to communicate with each other, and you will have instant communications for the military across, instant light speed communications across the globe of gigabit size, so you can take images, tracking for reasons you might want to image and track something, okay, fine. I don't want to get into that too deeply, but it'll be transported to a cute little room somewhere in Albuquerque, New Mexico. There'll be a guy sitting at a desk, and he'll be watching this object they're tracking in whatever country it might be in, and it'll be all over. And that's what Space Force is starting with, complete communications. What they're going to move to, complete detection, and then hopefully ways to intercept missiles in space. That's, I'd say, above my pay grade. I don't have a doubt that it's going to be in my pay grade soon enough, because that's probably what they're going to hire me to do. But
how long, time-wise, do you think it'll be before we get, like, actual, like, military spaceships, not just, you know, the satellites, the observation and detection we're working on?
I wish I knew.
I think it's decades, centuries.
Decades. I would love to be, you know, out there in a space patrol cruiser shooting my lasers. Is it a dream? Absolutely. And I'm going
to
have armor, and I'm going to have a sword. And, yeah, absolutely. I can't imagine it not being every kid's dream to have their own freaking spaceship. Who wouldn't want one? My characters in the Book of Ramon, they're driven by the concept of getting a spaceship. Oh, 5 minutes? I need to do this 10 times, guys.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads us into your other career here as an author. Like, what made you run from, like, hard science to fantasy and sci-fi?
So, I don't watch a lot of TV, and I have a lot of hours in the day. Now I have a kid and a wife, and that makes it tricky, but I used to run D&D campaigns. I'm always telling stories. And so when I was less employed between two jobs, my wife said, write one of them up. And so I wrote down The Broken Man, and 2 years later, that got published. And so it was kind of a D&D-based sort of, and I'm also an historian in my great spirit. I read history books as much as anything else. And so I have been studying Irish history, and I brought all that in. And then I have so many stories, I keep writing them. And I don't want to go through that. I shared it with you earlier, the whole Mark Center debacle. But I haven't been able to write science fiction for most of my previous employers. And under my current employer, they know and they don't care, as long as I am not touching
proprietary.
If I don't tell their proprietary stuff, they don't care. And they're, mind you, occasionally they'll come out and they'll read my author description at meetings and laugh a lot. So I'm a nutcase. They know that, and they put up with it. I dress in armor and I go beat people with swords. I've got a lot of hobbies.
Yeah, I imagine you spend so much time in real stuff that it's like, the fantasy is like, you got to get completely out of that to, like, you know, rest the brain.
I mean, who really wants to spend their, well, you know what? I know computer geeks who spend their days talking about computers, and I'm a computer geek, and I'd like to talk about fantasy characters and blowing up things, and, you know, let's be geeky and, you know, have a sword fight. I mean, for goodness sake, that's the worst part about spaceships. The chances of there being a real sword fight is real minimal, okay? That's the worst part.
So has your employer ever had to kind of say, don't put that in a fantasy novel because it blurred the line just a bit?
No. On fantasy, even my most critical security advisor, Castle Brave, starts with a security notice, because I'm a complete geek. And after he had not approved my previous two novels, I sent him Castle Brave's security review. He wadded it up and threw it at me, which tells me it was approved. It's a military-based novel, and it's very related to what we did at DITRA. However, it is completely fantasy, and he doesn't care. As long as I can put in a nuclear weapon, and he does not care, as long as it's a fantasy nuclear weapon. When I start describing how real ones work, he gets kind of nervous, which I did at one point, which is a mistake in that one. But in Castle Brave, note, not Castle Bravo, I don't describe any actual nuclear weapons. So there, it works.
Who are your books intended for? What age group?
So my daughter's 12, and she can read Pure Poison. It's clean. I don't have a lot of cuss words, and it's, but some of the words are a little more advanced. I have trouble reducing my vocabulary. I've been reading since I was at, I think I started Starbeast when I was 9. So I've been reading Heinlein since I was 9. I'm not good at figuring out what normal people understand in words. So sometimes my choice of words is not best for a 12-year-old. But as their word at college level, if you can read college level, I don't write anything that nobody can read. I don't put sex scenes in my books. Violence, yes, there is gosh-awful amounts of violence. My books are all entirely people sitting around talking and then lots of violence.
Well, I guess as we kind of bring this in for a landing before they kick us out of here, how can people find you, find your books, plug all your okay. things?
So currently my only publisher is Tuscany Bay. I've outlived 3 publishers. Tuscany Bay is still doing quite well, and they have Castle Brave and Court Human. The rest of them are on Amazon. I self-published 6 books on Amazon, and I'm also in LaPont has a collection of short stories called Swords and Maidens, and I'm one of the short stories in there.
Cool. Well, thank you for your time, sir. Thank you. Have a good con. We'll release you back into the wild.
Thank you.